Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. What you just heard are some of the indigenous leaders who were here performing last night at the U.S. Social Forum at the opening of our plenary session. And yesterday as well, there was a march. And there was a march that took place close to 10,000 activists from across the United States of America. A rainbow of human beings marched through the streets of Detroit. It was amazing. It was like a combination of a march for social justice and the Mardi Gras, all wrapped into one. And we covered that march yesterday in the heat of Detroit. And what's interesting to me is we get ready to let you hear some of what we heard yesterday on this march and some of the people we met on this march. It's the fact, you know, when the major media in America covers things, what do they cover? They cover the Tea Party. 500 people can show up, 1,000 people can show up, and it's a 10-day event in the U.S. media. 10,000 people, many young people from all across America, converge in Detroit to talk about a new America. And who covers in the major media? Nobody. We're here covering it for all of you, and other media is here trying to cover that as well. So now we're going to give you a glimpse of that march, a snapshot of what we saw yesterday, and then you'll hear conversations later in this program that we had with the great actor Danny Glover and with Janet Redmond from the Institute for Policy Studies. So now, let me take you to the march.
Excuse me, where are y'all from?
We're from San Francisco, Chinatown.
Chinatown, all right.
Yeah.
How'd you get here?
Well, we came here with our organization, the Chinese Progressive Association. Came out of the black liberation struggles about 40 years ago.
I remember.
And we're here because this is a place where people of like mind who want social justice and really wants to talk about the root cause of why people are poor, why people have been discriminated against, why the world is being poisoned and dying, addressing the issue of corporate greed. These are the people I trust that's going to do something about it. They've got an agenda. They've got intergenerational leadership. They've got really smart young people. And being Amen. Over 60, that's why I'm here.
We're here today because we live in historic moments of oppression, and as a community, it's up to us, the young people in our community, the black and brown community that's being killed by the police, that's being deported, stand up for our own rights, have autonomous spaces. That's what we got in the Bronx, and that's what we're here. We are young. We ain't no nonprofit. You know what I'm saying? We're doing it for the people and building the communities from within.
My name is Keisha Brooks. I am here on behalf of the Peace and Harmony Center as well as Hush House. But we are here at the Tin City, one, to show that here in Detroit, Michigan, we can have a show of humanity where we can bring people from all over the world that want to camp actually on these lots that we have already known are somewhat known as an eyesore. But today, it is a campsite for people from New York, from California, from San Francisco to lay their heads and rest and feel safe and feel secure on Woodward and Temple, on what some may say is one of the poorest communities in the country, but today is one of the richest in love and joy and of a commitment to whatever each individual's passions is. We're giving them opportunity to speak it and stand on it. So that's what we're here for.
Nebraska's for peace, huh?
Yeah, we got about 20 of us here from Omaha. We drove and flew yesterday, and we're an active group. We're not anywhere near as active as what we see here, but we can learn a lot of lessons.
Great. Good. Glad we're all together here. Good to meet y'all.
Nice, take care.
Signed the Emancipation Proclamation.
Standing amidst the giant puppets of Martin Luther King and Ella Baker, the crowd slows down and is very reverent. Very reverent.
Who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice.
Sangoma Oludoye, and I'm here from Oyutunji African Village in Sheldon, South Carolina. It's extremely auspicious. I just kind of got flung into it off the tail end of the Growing Power Movement, the Good Food and Justice Movement. And interestingly enough, this is the birthplace of the founder of the African Village, the first king. his son, the reigning king, will be in tomorrow, who will be doing what you're doing. We're going to video and talk to people about why they're here. But basically, I'm here just at this very moment being rejuvenated that the grassroots people have a voice, that they have a power, they're being heard, they came to be seen and to be reckoned with. And you know, I was wondering that to myself. I was like, look at all these people. There's not one television camera out here. You know, CNN is on something totally different. Why is that? Why is that? This is what the people are saying. Why are they not being heard? But, you know, one way or another, this lets you know that their voices are going to be heard. They're not idly waiting for politicians or anybody else to make a decision. They're taking their power back. That's why I'm here. Oyutunji African Village is celebrating 40 years this year. It was 1970 when the man born Walter Eugene King here in Detroit, Michigan, decided to do what these people want to do, which is to get out of an urban area, build a community that represents culture, that represents some of the history of our ancestors, with a way to bring the next generations back to enough knowledge to feel empowered, to not feel victimized, to not feel like they're the doormat in a political climate. And it's a great village. We're on YouTube. I do a program on YouTube called Inside Oyutunji, so people who want to know can look and see traditional West African culture alive and well at Oyutunji.
Ain't no power like the power of people, cause the power of people don't stop.
Say what?
Ain't no power like the power of people, cause the power of people don't stop.
Say what?
Ain't no power like the power of people, cause the power of people don't stop.
Say what?
Ain't no power like the power of people, cause the power of people don't stop.
Say what?
You say freedom, we want
freedom!
We want
freedom!
We want
freedom!
They say get back, we say
fight back!
They say get back, we say
fight back!
They say get back, we say
fight back! I'm Sharon Payne from Chicago. I'm with the STOP organization. There are like about 25,000 people that came in here for human rights and everything else that pertains to human rights. You know, they're putting people out of their homes, you know, putting people out of the cities, the poorer people out of the cities. All this pertains to that, has to also pertain to health care. You know, they're telling people who get Medicare and Medicaid no at a lot of the large hospitals. They're sending them to smaller places where a lot of people are dying, okay? That's why we're out here. It's one of the reasons why I'm here. Human rights is why we're out here. I think it's magnificent. It's magnificent, you know, that you could get all of these people coming as far as California and coming from abroad, from other countries, over here to get this many people to come together and to show the powers that be that we're thinking together, okay? That we're tired of it. We're just not going to take it anymore.
My name is Ben Landau Beispiel. I'm from Philadelphia. I'm out here to see whether the left in this country can come together as a coherent force and actually get something done. There's a lot of people who are satisfied to just have everybody working on their own little single issue campaigns. And I'm really hoping people can unite and have a more centralized effort to really change the direction this country is going.
My name is James Harris. I'm from Buffalo, New York. Right now, I currently live in South Carolina. What brings me to this social forum is just the thought of a collective voice. This is very powerful to see people gather around and actually do it for a cause bigger than themselves, actually for mankind. And you see there's different representations from every city and every state. So it's a beautiful experience, and I'm really enjoying myself.
Rakhida Vastali, I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina.
I'm Leilani Dowell from New York City.
I'm just here for the social forum. I'm with a youth group, youth activist group called FIST, Fight Imperialism, Stand Together. And we're just here to learn and meet people from across the country and try and, you know, get people involved and get people to join up, young people to join up and, you know, get active in their communities, hopefully.
We do all kinds of, it's an anti-imperialist organization, but we do all kinds of work from anti-war work to work on, you know, the war at home. We actually have a branch here in Detroit, and we're excited that there's so many people here to witness kind of the devastation that the economic crisis is having on Detroit. And so we really want to, like, foster connections between kind of the communities outside of Detroit and here. I'm just excited to be around so many, like, progressive folks who are doing good work, you know.
Especially seeing so many young people, too. And, like, just now in this opening march, like, so many of the chants were, like, based on the youth. And I've never, like, been in a march where that was the, you know, the main, or one of the main things. And I'm just, like, really excited about that. I'm really excited about working with young people.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, still obviously in Detroit here at the U.S. Social Forum. I sat down earlier today with Janet Redmond, who is one of our leading economic thinkers. She works on climate change and our economy and how to make the world better, but it's not a boring economic conversation you're about to hear. This is a woman who works actively with people in the communities about how to change the world we live in. So we take you now to the conversation we had with Janet Redmond earlier here at Cobalt Hall in Detroit. I'm Mark Steiner. We're doing another conversation here at the U.S. Social Forum. We're fortunate to have Janet Redmond with us. She's from the Institute for Policy Studies. She was in Copenhagen and Cochabamba. Now she's in Detroit. So,
I'm getting around.
You're getting around.
Climate scene.
Janet, let's start off just introducing you and your work to our listeners. And you, tell us about the work you're doing at IPS.
Sure. So at IPS, for quite some time, actually, we've been looking at climate finance. In part, that's been thinking about how public money is spent around climate, around energy. We've been tracking the World Bank and how they spend money, how they spend public dollars, exacerbating the climate change problem, and then trying to solve it with the other hand. So we've been trying to show some of the contradictions of the way that we're spending money around climate. More recently, though, we've been moving into thinking about what are some of the positive solutions, talking about how to use the financial system to help us heal the planet as well. So we're looking at the connection between the financial crisis that just happened recently and the climate crisis, and looking at the roots and causes of those crises and how we can formulate solutions that address both problems.
You're here, obviously, mm-hmm. We're talking mm-hmm. in Detroit, at the U.S. Social Forum.
In body, if not in mind.
Right.
Here.
And you were at Copenhagen, yeah. At that international conference where 100,000 activists from every continent on the globe were there, being led by indigenous people and women and poor people, and kind of putting to rest the notion that the environment was only about white middle-class kids in America. Yeah. I mean, they're in it too, but but it's very important to see that, and I don't think I've ever seen something like that before in history, seeing that many people from that many cultures and countries together in one place. And then you went to Cochabamba, which was an indigenous environmental conference, and now you're here. So I ask you that because I'm curious how you see the connection between these three kind of amazing events that seem to be bubbling up from the bottom.
Yeah, I guess the first is that the three things happened. So I think that in itself is actually a sign that there's a kind of a critical mass. There's a critical mass of people who are critically fed up with the way things are working right now, and so are seeing different spaces as important to engage in, and seeing that there has to be a strategy that really elevates and celebrates different ways that people work. And so some people work in terms of tight policy. You know, there's that UN Framework Convention on Climate Change meeting in Copenhagen was very focused in some ways on particular policy pieces inside a structure like the UN that is very legalistic and has implications in terms of state governments, right? I think the critical mass in Copenhagen is part of what made Cochabamba happen, because a particular government, Bolivia, said, wow, there really is an outpouring of civil society attention, and we need to help figure out a way to harness that popular energy and give it an outlet in the UN space, but also help foster the energy in the public space as well. So I saw Cochabamba really as being the link between spaces like the UN, which are official spaces, quote-unquote, that are about governments making promises to one another, and places like the U.S. Social Forum, which is absolutely in some ways anti-statist, or at least not a part of a state program, where people are saying we're going to make our own promises to each other from the bottom up because we care about each other and because we think it's important. And so it's just kind of interesting that Cojibama happened in between those, because I think it actually is kind of that link in between those two kinds of spaces. It's a space that was about bringing people in relationship with each other and about figuring out a way for that outcome to be plugged back into official spaces. So there was just a fascinating and exciting interactive process where I don't think this has ever happened before, where a really public open process of putting ideas on paper through a consultative process that happened over months, and then a physical meeting where people really had fascinating debates and discussions in a room together for hours. I mean, we were in those meeting rooms for 12 hours a day, and we still, you know, we're really willing to come back the next day and have a conversation some more about really kind of detailed stuff.
This is in Cochabamba.
This is in Cochabamba. Mm-hmm. You know, I was working on climate finance. We had a packed room, 150 people, for 12 hours a day for 3 days in a row, of just people engaged, giving their ideas, talking about their experiences.
And all these people were indigenous leaders from Latin
America? They weren't all indigenous leaders. They were mostly people from Bolivia, mostly people from Latin America, mostly indigenous, but also, you know, people from other kinds of social movements, Via Campesina, peasant movements, people who are working on new kinds of energy, kind of the energy transition revolution, workers groups, labor groups, NGOs, environmental groups, local environmental groups, international networks of groups. I mean, it was kind of a little bit of everything, but very driven by indigenous peoples, and having that as like the overall vision. But it was exciting. I don't think this ever happened where then that the outcome of that is put together and then enters into a UN space where it has weight as an official, because Bolivia introduced this agreement, people's agreement, into the UN space. It has party status, mm-hmm. right? So here's a global civil society movement now entering into an official state government to government space. It's interesting how it's all breaking these lines of popular versus or inside versus outside strategy. And I think what's fascinating about the social forum is that it's helping pull those lines apart too. So, you know, inside your town government, inside your city council, you know, how do we turn that inside out and then bring those messages from the streets into the official spaces and from the official spaces out into the streets? I think that's what's exciting about this space.
I wonder how you see, just also as an observer of all this, what you were just describing, and we've just watched how the national press and major media did not cover 10,000 people marching through the streets of Detroit,
yeah.
young people from all over this country,
yeah.
and all people, period, all over this country, and yet you see 500 people in a Tea Party or 2,000 people in a Tea Party demonstration, and it's news for 10 days.
Yeah.
Do you find that what's going on here is isolated, and then it's isolated from the mass of American consciousness, and how does that shift happen, do you think?
I mean, I don't think it actually is isolated. I think there's a real continuous stream, but you're right. I think the media has created a bubble around it to keep it contained. I think there's a vested interest in major media corporations, which are linked to other kinds of corporations, which are linked to other kinds of power, political power, to make sure that they're isn't a sense of critical mass, to make sure there isn't a sense of fed-upness with a positive outcome versus a let's tear down any kind of regulation, or let's tear each other apart, and let's have something based on fear and hate versus hope and compassion and positive thinking. So I think that's the difference between the Tea Party and the things that happened in the U.S. Social Forum. I guess I think the pathway forward from that is to... I think there are some wonderful pathways that exist, things like public radio, community radio, independent media, social networking. I mean, in terms of technological spaces and tools that are out there. I do think that, you know, the Tea Party is an interesting example of a bunch of people who are sick and fed up and, you know, are getting the raw end of a lot of deals. The question is, how do progressives harness that energy and anger and sense of being fed up and sick of what they're seeing? And I think it's really actually up to us to provide... some easier ways for people to plug in and to channel that energy. I think it's up to us to explain a lot of the concepts that we talk about in much simpler language and start by asking people what their stories are and start by using that as illustrations of that people can relate to. And then I think kind of building on the positive examples of, you know, solidarity economies that are happening everywhere that people are a part of, but might not call it a solidarity economy, you know, a babysitting cooperative where everyone in the office babysits for someone else's kids. That's a solidarity. It's a piece of the solidarity economy. That's actually connected to people in Maine, in Florida, in California, and Washington State. So there needs to be ways that we share our stories with each other in a way that helps us understand that we're the majority of people. You know, the Tea Party isn't the majority. The people who are interested in taking care of their families and their communities are, in fact, the majority of people in the U.S.
So you think that, to conclude, you think that the work you've been doing here is meetings you've had with young activists has been effective? The interaction has been one that's kind of moved this forward a bit?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think there are people right now who are really thinking about constructively engaging with one another. I think the role that, you know, that I can play here, the role that IPS plays here, that think tanks in general can play, is one of being supportive, is one of helping people articulate ideas and connect with other kinds of networks around the globe, connect with policymakers in D.C. if that's appropriate. But yeah, I absolutely see the energy that's here kind of, it moves beyond the social forum walls because we all are doing work, activism at home, and doing work with our friends and colleagues in other countries. So absolutely, I think this is part of building that critical mass, and I see it as very constructive.
Janet Redman, Institute for Policy Studies here at the U.S. Social Forum. It's been really great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And we look forward to having you on more.
Wonderful.
Take care.
Bye.
You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's free monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. This month, Urbanite writers look behind the gritty facade of some of the city's tougher neighborhoods. What they find may surprise you. Urbanite is available at over 800 locations and online at www.urbanitebaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com.